All right, everybody, welcome. Welcome to Hino's Home Show. I'm Hino, and as you probably guessed by now, this here is my home show. We've got a special show for you this week. As many of you know, we've had a little bit of a tornado here in recent weeks, and a lot of people have been affected. Their houses have been sadly blown away, or at least very badly damaged. So I've brought a couple people in here this week to help us discuss that and see what we can do to make the most of that. Before I get too far, let me just say that this show is brought to you by our good friends over at Accurate Mortgage Group. If you're looking to buy, sell, or refinance a house, give Accurate Mortgage a call. They'll help you get closed and back to life. And also, we'll talk about this a little bit later. If you need a loan to help put your house back together because of the tornado, we can help you with that as well. But in the studio today, I've got Wendy Dyes. She's a master realtor with Legacy Real Estate Group in Brentwood. And then we've got John Bell, president of the Bell Law Group and Bell Law Settlement Services Group. They do a lot of real estate law around town, and so they know the ins and outs of the legalities of a lot of the stuff that you're going to have to deal with if you find yourself in the sad situation of having your house torn apart by a tornado. So, John and Wendy, I guess the first thing we should talk about is when you find yourself in that position. One of the questions that comes up is, well, should I rebuild this place? Is it worth rebuilding, or should I just sell it and move on? I mean, what would you say to somebody who came to you and asked you that question? What are some of the things they need to consider in that case?
Well, thanks, Hino. There's a lot of factors, and what I would say is that you really want to do your homework. The first thing that I would do is figure out the current state of the house.
Okay.
Before you even get to contractors in there, educate yourself as to what really has happened to the house. I would hire an inspector that has a background in new construction to come in and look at the house, even if your house has just been jostled around, some of the things that could be affected.
Maybe even a structural engineer?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Even if it's lightly just jostled around and you're not quite sure, things that could be affected would be your HVAC. Even your plumbing, think about that. Like the PVC pipes are hard and rigid, could be affected. Your roof, of course, your foundation. And if you do think that it has been heavily affected, I would recommend getting a licensed engineer in there. So understanding the current state of your house, then you can talk about how much it would cost to rebuild the home, and then bring those people back after the contractor has been through and done their work. So then you've got something to compare it with.
All right. Well, before you even get that far though, John, you probably need to figure out, okay, I no doubt got a massive bill in front of me now. So what's the first phone call? I'm guessing your insurance company.
That's your guess, yeah. first phone call is insurance company, because that's the first thing you had. And one thing about this tragedy, as opposed to the 2010 flood, is in the flood, a lot of people didn't have flood insurance. Insurance doesn't cover floods unless you have a special rider for flood insurance. So the good news is that everybody that has insurance against a tornado. So we start there. So then the question is, what type of insurance do you have? Did it have replacement costs, or was it only going to repair it based on a depreciation calculation? And if you don't have full replacement costs, and if you didn't get it by the tornado, you know, check into that, because there's more tornadoes coming eventually. But then they may not have enough money to rebuild. Certainly, if the house is determined by experts, structural engineers, and so forth, that it can't be repaired, that it has to be demolished and rebuilt, then you've got a whole, you know, different set of plans and different set of costs.
Right.
Then the other thing we talked about was, if the insurance isn't going to cover the bill, and we've got to figure out how much the bill is going to be, and we're going to talk about that, then FEMA does have some money available. You know, small amounts of money that they might.
That's the Federal Emergency Management Administration?
That's exactly right, yeah. Of course, dealing with them can be difficult. And
a lot of red tape.
Yeah,
I think there's probably some people out there who make a career out of helping people navigate the red tape.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, our law firm can help you with those kind of things. And insurance, too, because as we all know, sometimes insurance companies are really good at collecting premiums.
Exactly. Yes.
As far as paying claims, sometimes
they would prefer not to if they could avoid it.
Yeah. Right. So sometimes we can help with that and get them to be a little bit more reasonable. But you can, if you don't have enough money, FEMA is a possibility, the housing fund after that, and some other charitable organizations might get help with that. And that's just the nucleus.
Now, the housing fund, that's probably going to be the last place you want to go to, right? Because don't they have certain restrictions on if you've already gotten money elsewhere, they're going to give you less?
Well, what the issue is, FEMA has that.
Oh, FEMA has that. That's right.
FEMA says, we'll give you X dollars, but if you're already getting other dollars, they deduct those dollars from the
okay.
FEMA award.
So in what order do you want to attack them all in? Obviously, insurance company
insurance
first.
FEMA second, okay. And then get them locked into a number. Then you can get additional funds on top of that.
Gotcha.
Possibly. But these are just, this is information, I know, that you have to know in order to make an informed decision on whether you're going to rebuild or sell.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're all for everybody rebuilding. That's our hope. But we don't want folks that decide not to rebuild or want to find another place. And Wendy, you know, you can talk about, that's another, as far as doing your homework, we have to do is, if you're deciding whether to build or sell, and you think, well, I might sell, you need to see what's on the market that you can replace it with. So
that's true.
That's super important.
Well, Wendy, how would you even decide, let's say you decide you do want to sell, how do you know what your lot is worth, for example? Because if there's no house there anymore,
right,
obviously that gets deducted from the value.
Well, that's a good question. So most of your insurance policy will handle the structure.
Okay.
So don't be cheated out of what your land is worth. Nashville is in a land shortage, so your land is very valuable. A couple of things you can do. Get with a licensed realtor, and that is a realtor. You can look them up on Tennessee.gov, make sure that they do have a license. And a realtor means that we have a code of ethics that we have to follow. A realtor can tell you how much your land approximately would be worth.
Mm-hmm.
So don't sell it out short. If somebody comes up to you and wants to buy it, put you in a long contract, you know, more than likely they're a wholesaler and they're not able to get to the closing table, and they're just going to sell it to somebody and make a profit off of you.
Just off of the sales contract.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So there are people out there that have cash money and willing to close. So a couple of things that you can do is ask for a proof of funds.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a bank statement. Follow up with that bank statement. Follow up with that bank. Understand that they've got the funds to be able to quickly close that. Talk to different realtors. Get several different opinions, because land in Nashville, typically a lot of pieces of property have been subdivided. So a realtor can work with Metro Codes, or even an individual can call Codes.
So you're talking like a situation where they might tear down one house and put up two in its place.
Correct.
Sometimes maybe even four, depending on
absolutely
zoning and if it's allowed. You need to know that.
If they can put more than one house on your property, then that property value is going to be a lot higher than what you think.
So doing your homework is very important so you don't get shortchanged.
Absolutely.
So if you decide to, let's say, keep your house, that's one scenario. You've got the insurance money and hopefully you have enough from that to rebuild. But if you decide to sell it, then you're looking at another place that you need to buy. So the insurance company then pays you out for the value of your house, even though you're not going to rebuild it, John?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so.
Because it's just like when you wreck a car. I don't know if you've ever had friends that got the insurance money, didn't repair the car.
Mm-hmm.
The insurance company can't force you to rebuild. Now, one thing we haven't talked about.
I mean, you either have to rebuild or sell. You can't leave it. If it's a flat,
well, yeah,
you can't
right,
just leave it there, right?
Yeah, codes wouldn't let you do that. But the other factor that we really haven't talked about is when you sign the mortgage or the deed of trust, it says
right
that if the house is destroyed, the mortgage company gets the money. So
if you have a loan on it.
Yeah,
right,
if you have
right
a loan on it, right. But so that's what I'm saying. That,
up
that's
to the amount of the remaining balance of
right
the loan.
Right, and then you would get the remainder.
Right.
And then you would have to get a construction loan to really rebuild.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that fine line between your house is damaged, your mortgage company knows about it or whatever, whether they know about it or not, and you rebuild it with the insurance money. Well, they will know because they are a named loss payee on your homeowner's insurance.
That's right.
They're going to determine, the mortgage company to some extent, is can we rebuild this and my collateral's good, me being the mortgage company.
Right.
Or this is not going to be able to be real. But it's all like going back to the automobile analogy. You know, is it totaled or not?
Right.
If it's
totaled,
the mortgage company's getting paid off.
Right. That's they're getting the paid off. You get whatever's left. And so you can sell that piece of land and use that and whatever's left over from the insurance to then go buy a new place.
Yes. You can go, so there your options are. In this scenario, Wendy, when the mortgage company gets the money, you're not getting money to rebuild. So absolutely. You're going to have to go get a construction loan or a loan from Hino to do that.
And Hino, tell us a little bit about what some of the loans are out there right now for rebuilding or remodeling.
So the majority of the rebuilding money is going to come from your insurance policy. There is an FHA loan, a 203H loan, which is specifically targeted to people who've been affected by natural disasters.
Really?
That can be 100% loan. It's the only FHA loan that lets you go all the way up to 100%. So you don't need a down payment. And it can take... It can help you either buy a new house or it can help you supplement what you're missing to rebuild your current house, especially if it's just damaged rather than completely gutted. But we'll probably get into that a little bit more later. We do have to take a quick break right now. I'm here with John Bell from Bell Law and Wendy from Legacy Real Estate Group. We're talking about the recent tornado that we've had here in Nashville and how we can best navigate that. We'll be back in just a few minutes here on Hino's Home Show. All right, welcome back to Hino's Home Show. We are talking tornadoes and how that...
I love the bumper music.
Yeah, and how that affects your house. This is Hino's Home Show. We're brought to you by Accurate Mortgage Group. They'll help you get closed and back to life. Give them a shout at accuratemtg.com. I've got Wendy Dyes of Legacy Real Estate Group, John Bell from John Bell Law, and then on the phone, just joining us right now, we've got Mr. David Wilbanks of Montgomery & Associates Insurance. Are you there with us, Dave?
I'm here with you.
All right, great. So one of the things that we wanted to know, Dave, is we were just talking about this in the last segments. If your house gets damaged in a natural disaster and you have to use your insurance policy to help, you know, make a claim, how does that work? Who gets paid first? What happens to the money that's left over? Who gets the land? I mean, is it like a car where they take the car back and you get the check? Or how does that work? Let's say I'm calling you right now and I say, David, my house got blown away by a tornado. What's next?
Well, it can get complicated.
Okay.
And the reason it is because FEMA's giving money too.
Okay.
So any payout by the insurance company reduces the FEMA benefit.
All right.
So when there's a total loss and you own your house outright, then they're going to write you a check automatically, probably that day if you have a total loss.
Okay.
If there's a mortgage company involved and there's a mortgagee clause in the contract on an insurance policy, then the mortgage company is going to get paid.
They're going to get paid whatever the balance is on the mortgage.
That's correct.
Okay.
Anything left over, you would get paid that.
Okay. So then if that's not enough to rebuild your house, then you got to go find other money.
Well, inside an insurance policy, there's an extended dwelling protection rider.
Okay.
So if you have that written in there, then they can be building the house back. And if it costs more, they'll use that endorsement.
All right.
Depends upon the policy that you chose.
So if you've got the right insurance policy, the mortgage company will get paid off and you'll have enough money to build your house back.
That is correct.
Okay. Now, what if you decide to sell your house? So does the insurance company pay you any differently if you decide not to rebuild?
They're going to only give you the value of your dwelling A coverage.
Okay.
When that happens. Okay. They're not going to do any of the extended dwelling protection.
Okay, perfect. So that kind of answers that question.
So mortgage companies will allow a homeowner to rebuild their house if it's completely destroyed, if they have the insurance to do that?
Oh, yeah, they will.
All right.
We were just looking at that, you know, that clause in the mortgage that says that, you know, they get the first bite of the apple of the insurance money, but if they're confident that it's going to be rebuilt and there's enough money there to do it, they'll let you continue to pay on the mortgage. You can use your loss of use money to pay that mortgage, right? Among other things.
No. Loss of use.
Well,
that was actually going to be my next question, sure. David. Okay, what is loss of use coverage? I guess most people don't even realize that they have that. So what does that do for you?
Well, it lets you have a place to go and stay. And so if you're totally displaced from your home, whether it's a tornado, whether it's a fire, whether it's an airplane from the airport falling on your house, then you can go and rent somewhere else.
Okay.
And you can't go rent the Taj Mahal, but okay. You can rent a like dwelling that you're in right now.
So how long is that coverage?
It depends upon what policy that you have. Some are actual loss sustained. Others give a certain dollar amount. And then some companies will keep it to 2 years or 1 year, something like that.
Wow. Depends upon.
Which hopefully you can have rebuilt in that time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, David, thank you. Informative as always. Thank you for joining us on Hino's Home Show. Everybody, check out Dave. Give your URL again, your website address, Dave.
You can go to our website at MontgomeryandAssociates.com.
All right. Well, thanks so much, David. We'll talk to you next time. All right. So that kind of gives us a little insight into the whole insurance situation and how to pay for that. But how about it just understanding the market in general? You probably need to get, you know, after you've dealt with your insurance company, now you got to get a team of people together, right? And help kind of navigate through all of this stuff, because there's no way one person's going to know all the ins and outs of you need to do.
So honestly, we've talked about a lot of different people here today. And so I would suggest that you put a team together, just like your football team. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not all just quarterbacks. So you need to get your entire football team together for you. And that's going to be your legal counsel, a realtor, your contractors, your engineers, your inspectors, your subcontractors, your insurance. So put this team together of these people that are going to help you through this process.
I would probably even add one to that. Okay. I would add a good designer, interior designer, because if you all of a sudden now you've got to pick everything brand new and there's 10,000 kitchen faucets on the market, or light fixtures, it really would be great to have somebody go and narrow that down for you in the first place and say, okay, here's 5 to choose from rather than 200.
Well, especially if you're planning on building. So right now, the good news is we've got some good news in this storm. Codes is prioritizing rebuilds and remodels for people.
Right.
So they're expediting all of their work. What's really great news is Nashville is in a good state for rebuilding. We have had a real estate boom of new construction, and because of that, warehouses are stockpiled full of building materials that are already here. We've got tons of subcontractors that are out there working, architects that are there. So all of that is going to help, where I think that if we were in a different city that didn't just have this great real estate building boom, we may not have been in that state. So currently you're looking at a new construction, basically a custom built home, normally would have taken about 6 to 8 months, maybe add a couple of more months onto that. But the biggest thing that's going to slow you down is really just going to be how fast you can work with your insurance company, and how long it takes you in your selections, meaning how long does it take you to put to your building design together with your architect.
Right.
And you made the great point of hire yourself a good interior designer that has a new construction background to help narrow down the focus, because the things you're looking at, you're going to have to be quickly picking out
flooring, bricks, walls, floors,
everything.
Yeah.
And there are interior designers out there that have this new construction background that they've already got it like narrowed down. They can figure out your style. They can come to you with 3 or 4 different selections and make it really easy.
Yeah. If you go, probably have a conversation with you about your tastes and that kind of thing. And,
absolutely.
And then run with it.
If you go through those steps, building is going to be pretty simple. And I mean, there's always roadblocks.
knock on wood there.
There's always some roadblocks, but it's going to be a little easier for you. So those are some of the factors that would slow you down if you did decide to build. But the great news is Nashville, we were prepared for that.
Yeah. I wonder how much, because we do have so much building going on, how much of a shortage there might be in workers, because they're already busy. They're already, there's building going on everywhere. And so now all of a sudden there's more.
They are, but we have had so many people flock to Nashville, you know, that are subcontractors already. I mean,
because of the disaster.
Before the before that.
To this demand you're talking about.
Oh, I see. Just to address the demand.
Yeah, just the demand of building Nashville and as fast as we're growing. So we do have stocked warehouses. We do have a lot of subcontractors. Get yourself with a good licensed contractor. Do your homework on them. Make sure they've got their license. You can look up their license, make sure that they are local. But the ones that are sticking around for this long process of building for 6 to 8 months to a year, these guys are in it for the long haul. They're Nashville locals. They're not going to be storm chasers in and out, you know, the next day.
Yeah, that's true. John, is there any sort of requirement to build your house exactly the way it was before?
Well, you know, that's going to be with the mortgage company because they want their collateral to be the same. You certainly couldn't build it to where it's worth less.
But if you decided to add like an extra bedroom, for example, or just change the floor plan to a completely different thing, I mean, it doesn't have to be a carbon copy of what was there before.
I don't think so, but in other words, they want the collateral to be the same. They're certainly not going to give you money to rebuild to add square footage.
Okay.
I think square footage would be the main thing. That may be a question for David, too. But
if you can pull that off for the same cost.
Yes.
Well, yeah, one of the biggest factors in
that's your limitation is going to be the cost.
Well, the biggest factor, too, is going to be your covenants in your subdivision.
Mm-hmm.
So be able to check with that because a lot of subdivisions have size. They have architectural designs that they have to approve.
So you got
to
go through your HOA.
Understand you're going with your HOA. The other thing is there's going to be overlays in parts of the city. So you are going to have
like a historical overlay in East Nashville, for example.
There's several, right? Mm-hmm. So they have to, in certain areas of town, they will have to approve your architectural design. But if you're with a good architect, they're probably going to be able to help you through that and some of those designs. But the first thing is, if you do have an HOA, be able to check with them on size, building materials, that sort
all
of
that
thing
stuff,
that's required.
I guess those bright purple bricks are probably not going to fly.
And also, if you are on a septic, because there are people on septics. Now, you can't just go and add other bedrooms and different things if you are on septic.
And in some parts of town, if they've brought sewer into the neighborhood, they're going to require you to connect to the sewer. If you're on septic, if you end up rebuilding.
And some of the septic, if you look at the tornado damage in a macro sense, you know, going towards Lebanon and Cookeville, there's certainly going to be some septic tank issues.
Yeah,
absolutely. And so at that point, you want to be able to contact the city and understand what your septic was, what your land was perked for.
Okay.
So that's going to be able to
limit
tell you.
Limit your bedrooms.
It will limit your bedrooms on what you can build back.
All right. Well, thanks for that. We've got to take another quick break. We're going to come back with a whole lot more of Hino's Home Show. We're going to talk about construction scammers and what to look out for in that area. So come on back to Hino's Home Show. Welcome back to Hino's Home Show. I'm Hino. I'm here with John Bell, Bell Law Group, and Wendy Dyes of the Legacy Real Estate Group in Brentwood, Tennessee. We are talking tornadoes and how that's affected all of Nashville recently, especially certain parts of the city has really been devastated. And one of the things that kind of happens anytime a natural disaster happens is it kind of attracts scammers. It attracts some unscrupulous people to come to town and try to part you from your insurance money. First of all, what are some of the things, John, that people need to look out for in that area?
Well, I think the thing that's important is to try to hire a local contractor because you don't want the folks that go from storm to storm or the storm chasers. They're not going to have the warranties. If there's a defect in the workmanship or materials, they're not going to be able to stand behind that for you. So that's the most important thing. And then they don't have incentive necessarily to do the job properly in a workmanlike manner.
Because you're not going to find them in a few weeks.
Because there's no warranty work that they have to do. So they could be cheaper, but they could be more expensive because they're going to take advantage of you. Some of them are going to take advantage of you to get the biggest dollar they can get from you.
Right.
So Wendy, I think you've got some thoughts on that too.
Most of those people are going to be in and out very quickly in the city.
Right.
They're not going to be here for the long term, for the 6 months, 8 months to a year in the building process. These are guys that are following insurance money for roofs, sidings, and windows. Yeah,
jobs that can be banged out in a day or two.
Exactly. Yeah. Very quickly done. They're coming into town because one of the biggest reasons is that insurances will pay more money on roofs and siding repairs than you can get on the fair market. Okay. So they're coming in and wanting to take your insurance money. And sometimes they're actually coming under a licensed contractor here in Nashville.
Using their license
as an umbrella to operate. Mm-hmm. But yet they're going to be gone. And then that local contractor is not going to guarantee their work and their workmanship. So
there's a certain responsibility on the contractor to vet the people that they're hiring.
There is, and we would hope so, right? Yeah. So in that case, here's what I'm going to say. Do your homework. The biggest thing you can do is, you know, get their license and look it up on the web to understand that the Tennessee.gov, do they have?
Yeah, Tennessee's got a great website. You can look up anybody's license.
Correct.
Yours, mine, everybody, and see how long they've been in business.
All the permits they've ever pulled, mm-hmm. any complaints they've ever had. You can have everything right there. So that's the first point.
Right.
But these people may be coming in from out of state and they're working underneath someone local. So you also have to do your research. Don't take it at face value. Things that I suggest is get a business card and even look up their address on their card. Make sure that it's them.
That it's actually there.
Yeah, that
it's not a P.O. box or something.
They haven't just scammed that. You know, look at their license plate.
Yeah.
See where they're coming from. Ask for referrals and follow up on those referrals.
Yeah, if possible, go visit some of the other jobs that they've done
around town. Make some phone calls. Just do a lot of questions. Ask a lot of questions. Where's their office? Do they have a website? Do they have references? Are they just chasing storm work? And if they are just chasing storm work, there's plenty of subcontractors here in town that would be able to give you a very fair price.
Right. And stand behind their work, which is the most important part. Now, John, you were saying earlier that aside from construction people being predatory, there might be some on the developer side that might be trying to get your house or get your land. And maybe predatory is a strong word, but what are some things to look out for in that area?
Well, I think some folks in these communities in particular, and it's interesting from a Davidson County perspective that it hit North Nashville, Germantown, and East Nashville, because those communities are well aware, Donaldson going north, not so much, or east, not so much, but they're well aware that people, I mean, before the storm happened, they had people knocking on the door that wanted to buy their house, tear it down, and put some new homes there.
Okay.
And so they're already sensitive to that, and they feel like, some in the community feel like that folks are taking advantage of them. They're displacing folks that have traditionally been there their whole lives and for generations. And so there's already that. So now that there's a disaster, and really the three primest areas for this kind of work, wouldn't you agree, Wendy?
Right.
I mean, nations maybe, but nations didn't get hit. John Toon Airport got hit, but they didn't get hit. But I would say really East Nashville, certainly, number one, Germantown.
And
one
even or, North Nashville, there's one a lot or two. Of
and
new
now North,
construction
yeah,
there.
Absolutely. So what's happening, Hino, and what the community organizers over there are fearing is that they're going to come in, you know, offer to write a check and take the property at deep discounts. Or, as Wendy alluded to, they're going to tie them up contractually with some sort of six-week closing.
Why is that bad? Tell me about that.
Well, the reason that it's not as beneficial to the homeowner is that we know if they're doing that, then their property's worth a little bit more, mm-hmm. because their job is to identify these properties, tie them up contractually, they're sold to that person or that company, and it's assigned. So that and even if it doesn't say that, if the contract doesn't say it's not assignable, it is assignable legally in Tennessee. So what they're going
to
do
So what that means is I make a contract with you, for example, and then I go find somebody else to pay me for that contract.
Right.
Like, you can take my place on this contract for X amount of dollars.
Right. So they're making profit off of your land. So the key here is...
They're inserting themselves as a middleman where...
Right. The key here is that, yeah, they're making profit off of you, and where we're in a land shortage in Tennessee. So if a contractor or a builder, developer wants your land, they'll wait for it. There is such a demand for building. Don't make the emotional
decision.
Or
they'll pay cash for it. They're not going to tie it up for 6 weeks.
Yeah, and you just made a good point. I would imagine that emotions are going to be running very high with people if they're found in this situation.
And if they're good con men, they're going to play on those emotions, and they're going to know how to do that.
Right. Yeah. So just take your time. Go back to build your quarterback and build your team and make sure you've got people that are looking out for you in that process. Mm-hmm. Do your homework, understand all your different scenarios, and at that point, then you can make an informed, educated decision. And if someone wants to come in, they will pay fair market value for your house. So a lot of the predatory developers that are out there, they're just trying to get you in as cheaply as you can. Understand what can be built on your house and understand what the value is. And again, I would get with a good licensed realtor that can tell you all of the different options of which your land is valued.
I really think a realtor would be better in this case, because appraisers are going to appraise it based on what houses similar to yours sold for.
Right.
And if they sold it to a developer, then that would be a comparable sale. But if they just sold it to another person, that's not going to be a comparable sale, because really your land is worth to a developer is based on how many homes they can get on the lot.
How many pads there are. Right. How many buildings they can put on it.
Or the value of what they can build on it.
Yeah, that's really how you start. You start at the sale price,
right,
and then you back, and then about a fourth of that is about what the land's worth as a just general rule.
Well, how would your average person then, how would I know if I have one of these houses, hey, how many houses could I potentially put on my lot? So how much is my lot worth?
You're going to have to, that's where the real estate agent or attorney.
Okay. Because zoning obviously is important.
Right.
You can call zoning yourself, and you can have those questions, or you can ask a realtor. And what I would also suggest is that you get multiple different ideas from different realtors, because some realtors may be representing the builder. And so they're, you want to make sure that you've got a realtor that is going to be representing you.
Right.
So that is going to be a seller's representation contract, mm-hmm, for you, that they're good faith, that they are trying to work in good faith just for you, and that they're not working for anyone else that's trying to buy your land.
Right.
So you can go on, look up National Association of Realtors, check to see if they are a licensed realtor, if they do fall underneath the code of ethics, and then ask, who are they representing? Will they be representing you, or are they representing the buyer? And that's very important, because you do have the right to be able to have your own representation as an agent.
Right.
And their duty to who they're representing is they're looking after their interest. So if they're representing the builder or developer, then they're not looking after your interest. You need somebody to represent.
Then they have conflict of interest, because they're actually trying to get the lowest price possible, and they're going to tell you, oh, your house is worth $10.
That's what I was going to say. I think the red flags are when they come up to you and say, well, I don't know if I want to rebuild. Let's say you're in the position, I'm not sure if I want to rebuild or not. We're saying get a team, get your money together, get your estimates to rebuild together, and then make an informed decision whether you want to stay in a hotel for a year and build or sell it. And the important thing is, if they're saying, if you're coming with those reservations to them, if they've knocked on your door, I'd like to buy your house, and they're saying, and they're encouraging you not to rebuild, oh, you don't want to do that, oh, that's going to be, oh, you're going to hate that, you don't want to live in a hotel room, those are red flags.
Right. They're trying to pressure you
exactly.
At that point. Yeah. All right. Well, listen, I don't want to give y'all out there any pressure, but I really need you to come back for one more segment. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about some of the legal stuff you need to look out for and what to do if you find yourself needing legal help to get your house rebuilt. So come on back to Hino's Home Show here in just a moment. Welcome back to Hino's Home Show. I'm Hino. I'm here with John Bell from the Bell Law Group and Wendy Dyes of Legacy Real Estate Group, Brentwood. We're talking tornadoes and all the poor people who've been affected by the tornadoes here in Nashville recently. And we kind of want to talk a little bit now about kind of the legal side of things. And mm-hmm. and John, one of the things that I see that happens a lot, even just outside of tornadoes, is I'll get a call from somebody who wants to refinance their house. And then once we look into it, they don't actually own the house. You know, maybe grandma or dad or somebody died and left it to them, but no paperwork was ever done.
Right.
Talk about that. And what do you do in that case?
Well, we had a case today. We were talking with some folks from the housing fund, and they have some monies to help people get fixed up, a few $1,000s here and there, depending on your income status, you know, if you qualify for their relief. But they had a guy, and so he was talking to him about lending him $10,000 to fix it up. Maybe he was underinsured. I don't know those details. But he asked him if the house was in his name. He said, well, no, it's actually my grandmother's name. When my grandmother died, my mother moved here. I was raised here. And then when my mother died, we just stayed here, which a lot of people do. There's nothing necessarily wrong with it. But you don't have title to the house, so you can't sell it. And in his case, because the repairs he was having to do were electrical and foundation, which have to be inspected by codes.
Needs permits.
You get a permit. If you don't own the house and you're not a general contractor, you can't get a permit. So he can't give him the $10,000 to fix his house up without curing this title work.
So that's what if you had a contractor pulling permits for you, then does that solve that problem?
You probably could fly under the radar that way because mm-hmm. they're going to look at the contractor's license. They don't really look at the contract you have with the contractor. But technically, the contractor doesn't have the right to work on the house because he's not dealing with the owner.
Ah, man. So in that case, they have to come to somebody like you. And what do you have to do to...
Well, there's two methods. One is going to court, and that's obviously more expensive and more time-consuming. But if the decedent, if your ancestor didn't have a will, then the property transfers based on Tennessee's intestate succession. Intestate just means died without a will. And that scheme is it first goes to your spouse. If you're not married, it goes to your children. If you don't have any children, it goes to your parents. And if all those are deceased, it would go to your brothers and sisters.
Okay.
So in our scenario, let's say the parents are dead, the children... and the spouses are dead, both parents are dead, then it's going to go to the children.
Okay.
And we can convey that if they died without a will by getting two affidavits, two sworn statements under oath, you know, punishable by perjury, that they knew the parents and for X number of years and that these were the only children that they ever had. So you're getting sworn affidavits from two non-disinterested third party, so they can't be a beneficiary.
Can't be your other brother.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Okay, yeah.
That's a self-serving affidavit, and those won't work. But if you can identify who the heirs are, that's all the affidavit does. Then you just apply that to the law, which is the succession that we talked about.
Okay.
Record that in the Register of Deeds office, and then you have title to it.
Okay.
And that can happen pretty quickly, correct?
Yeah, it can happen very quickly. And what you're looking for in your third party, say, well, you know, mom and dad didn't have any friends or whatever, but church, you know, pastors,
doctors,
neighbors, doctors.
Mm-hmm. So what's really quick in
the affidavit of heirship?
Yeah, no, but you said it could be happening really, really quick. How long is that? Is it a couple of weeks?
A week, yeah.
Really? Quick?
As soon as you get those if you get the we'll prepare the affidavit form. Okay. We know the form that it has to be
okay.
in. And then get them to sign it and have it notarized and record in the Register of Deeds office. It could all be right. a day, you know.
And then
really.
Once all that's done, then you can go ahead and refinance or get the money
right.
to get permits and that kind of thing. What do you do if we were talking insurance in an earlier segment. What do you do if you're having issues with your insurance company and they're not wanting to pay you or they're wanting to pay you very little?
See, that's the question. And that's the same thing back to our automobile analogy. You know, now, the automobile is a little easier because generally if something's discovered that they didn't account for, the adjuster can go back to the body shop and say, look, this is damaged. Okay, well, I'll give you more money. And that's sort of how the way it works on a construction claim. So The question is, if you get to a disagreement on how much it's going to take to get it back like it was, then what do? And then you can, you know, ask an attorney to get involved. And that usually goes down the road of battle of the experts. So you're going to have your experts line. Yeah, which is expensive.
And you got to hire them. Yeah. Right. They don't just show up for free.
Yeah, that, like in the flood in 2010, basically to come out and get an estimate on your house, you had to pay for the estimate.
Wow.
Because imagine how long it takes to prepare an estimate to rebuild a house completely. Mm-hmm. You know, so you know, you're not just going to get an estimate on that.
So do you think
you might get somebody to say, you know, so much a square foot or something, but yeah, that's not really an estimate.
Do you think some of the insurance companies might be banking on the fact that you don't have the money to do all that?
It's a possibility, but they do have a duty to act in good faith, and a lot of people have that duty, but insurance companies, it's a particular duty, and it's related primarily to how much they have to pay if you sue them. And if you can prove bad faith, mm-hmm, which is it's a legal standard, then they can be looking at treble damages and punitive damages and things for not paying your claim.
Wow.
Well, it sounds to me that it would be important if you don't know who is on your title of your home to contact you and to understand, you know, if they want to need title work cleaned up, or possibly even at that time, would this be a good time to put something in a trust?
Well, I don't know. You know, we talked about putting insurance money in a trust. I don't know if the insurance company and the mortgage company are going to let you do that. Because mm-hmm, the mortgage company's interest is to get the house rebuilt.
Right, because that's their collateral.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is also the insurance company's.
But it also is a good time just to.
But if you had that extra money after the mortgage was paid off, you certainly could put that in a trust, and that would help you maybe get some creditors.
But if you rebuilt your house, you can also put that in a trust.
Yeah, you can, and that's an estate planning question. And a lot of people do that so they don't have to go through the probate process, because then everything's done by the trustee and the trust.
Once it's actually rebuilt, then they can call you and put it in a trust.
Right. And we're wanting to, all three of us are wanting to help folks out. We're going to give us our websites out at the end of the show, and if enough people are interested, we're looking at trying to meet with you and at no charge and try to work through some of these issues with
you. Well, as long as you brought it up, how can people get a hold of you?
Well, for Bell Law, it's belllawtn.com. pretty easy.
Yeah.
And there's a place on that site where you can email us or contact us or place an order. I'm not sure what the button says, but
I'll take one legal brief to go, please. Yes.
And so, you know, you can get in touch with that way, and it certainly has the phone numbers on there.
Yeah.
And then we'll have some team members that are taking those calls that can try to determine what the interest is and get a group together. Maybe we can answer everybody's questions all at once.
How about you, Wendy? How can people get in touch with you?
They can go to Wendy Dyes, D-Y-E-S, mm-hmm, Realty.com. They can find me there, and my phone number, my email there. They can contact me if they do have questions on, I can even look up if their name's on the title. I can, mm-hmm, pull up their tax records. I can give them a good understanding as to what their land value would be, or if they are just thinking that they want to see how much their money can buy in Nashville, that's how I can help.
See, I think that's important. If one of the pieces of information you do when you're doing your homework, assembling your team, is you got to find out what funds you have to repair. You've got to find out how much it's going to cost repair.
Right.
And then if one of your options is to sell and move, you've got to find out what it's going to take to replace that. Where can you move? How much can you afford? They can get with you.
Right.
I know, and see what their buying power is. That's number one. Actually, if they're thinking about
absolutely first
moving.
Best step.
Yeah, that's something we talk about all the time. You don't want to be spending a bunch of time looking at a house that you can't afford, and it's just going to break your heart.
Yeah, so. It's like going to a jewelry store, and you know you hadn't done your credit application if you don't have cash to buy. You know, I mean, you don't know if you can afford that
right.
ring or not. You know.
Now, are there any other glaring legal issues that people need to just be careful about when they find themselves in this situation?
Well, nothing glaring. I mean, you know, you have the premises liability. If your house is, you know, has some issues with it and you have some guests over and they
dangerous.
Get hurt,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can get some claims like that. So be real careful about letting people that don't live in the home you know, come walk around and that kind of thing.
Just in case they might get hurt, and then you end up with another legal problem.
If there's a weak floor that, you know, you may not have even discovered yet, and they fall in it, you know, there's a claim there.
Yeah, that can be a problem. So then what do we need to do as far as if we wanted to do another get together, we could do that here locally.
Yeah.
So
absolutely. Yeah. We'll be putting together some meetup groups to be able to discuss this. We'll have people that will be could be on your team that can answer all of these questions all at one time.
Great. Right. Well, thank you both for coming and hanging out with us today.
I want to say one quick
thing.
Yeah,
go for it.
I love your bumper music, and I love being on a show where the person only has one name. So I don't know if it's Madonna, you know, Sting, Hino today.
Just Hino. Yeah, and you can find me at hinoshomeshow.com. Of course, you can also find me at accuratemortgage.com. If you do have mortgage-related questions, I'd be more than happy to help you, especially if you need to rebuild your house here as a result.
And refinance
right now. Absolutely. So John Bell, Wendy Dyes, thanks for joining us on Hino's Home Show. We will see you next week.